And the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, if you're looking to, you know, change your job, you got to spruce up the resume. One way you could do that would be to add Gopher Football Booster to your resume. And to do that, all you have to do is spend $100 and you'll be a Goal Line Club member.
And to do so, go to goallineclub.org/memberships and join today. Reminder, 100% of that membership goes directly to the Gopher Football Program.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to what a boring non-conference for the first time in the PJ Fleck era. As for the first time since 16, 17, Minnesota wins all three non-conference games by 38-plus points. Is this what it's like to be a consistently good program leader? I have no idea. So joining us to break down the evisceration of the Buffaloes from Colorado is my second cousin, Dinkytown Athlete's own, Derek Burns. Derek, I am now horrible against the spread on this podcast. I am horrible on the over-under, but I am just not used to a Minnesota team not playing down to the level of their opponent. It's a strange world we live in now. We get to talk about, is this team actually good or not? But how are you today?
I'm doing very well. I appreciate you guys having me back. And, you know, I'm with you. We talked about it a couple weeks ago that the approach in the non-conference has certainly changed. I think that's true on both sides of the ball. And it has resulted in three blowouts so far, which has been fun to watch.
All right, so let's get into this Gophers 49-7 victory over the Colorado Buffaloes. Once again, I just want to highlight that Mr. Ryan Burns, the game that you hyped up so much as being the Joe Rossi, Mike Sanford game, it really wasn't much of a game. So, all right, so let's get into it. When the Gophers were on offense, they put up 35 points in the first half. I do want to note one statistical anomaly that I found just hilarious in this game. The Gophers had 35 points to, I believe, something like 28 total yards in the first half. So I turned to the guy that I was sitting next to at the game next to me, and I said, so is it pretty good when you outscore the team when your score is greater than their total number of yards? I don't know, Derek, if you've ever played in a game like that, but man, what a blitz in the first half for the Gophers.
Yeah, it was, I think part of it was the fact that for some reason, Colorado decided to go hurry up in the whole first half, which really made things exponentially worse for them because they ended up turning the ball back over to the Gopher offense with very little time off of the clock. So the fact that they didn't slow that down, the game really worked against them. Now, to be fair to them, obviously they were trying to not let the Gophers defense get set up. But, you know, on offense, Luke, I would say Colorado moved their defensive front on almost every single play, specifically the defensive line slanted on almost every single play. And the Gophers offensive line in particular handled that extremely well. Maybe the best that we've seen an offensive line handle that movement from one of these non-conference opponents in all the time we've been doing this podcast. So an exceptional job, and that's really what opened up the huge running lanes particularly in the first half. So starting there, that was where the Gophers, if you're able to pick up that movement, it's going to leave defenders out of their gap, and it will leave chunk plays available in the running game, and that's what we saw to start.
I mean, I think you look at that opening drive by Minnesota offensively, and I texted Derek about this. I really enjoy having Kirk Ciarrocca back. You saw in that opening drive, I think they went three or four times to jet motion, even on the first play of the game. I highlighted in my GIF rewind that you saw Minnesota go to a lot of that jet motion, and what they were doing is, say, Clay Geary comes from left to right across your formation. Well, why Kirk Ciarrocca is doing that is because he knows that Colorado's in man coverage. So him jet motioning across Clay Geary and then running back to that side where he's vacating. I mean, the first play of the game, that's all they do. It's inside zone left, but Clay Geary comes across and there's no one there because that's what he did. He drug him away. Mo Ibrahim is 10 yards down the field before he sees contact. There were a couple other plays on that drive. It's just what it's not reinventing the wheel with Minnesota's running offense. Everyone knows Minnesota's going to run the ball. Everybody knows that Mo Ibrahim is going to get a lot of touches, but it's doing it in these little subtle nuanced ways to keep it fresh that is leaving me encouraged. Now, I understand Colorado's a horrible team. Like, I don't know that they have their head coach there much longer. I mean, that's how bad they have truly been. But that's what you're supposed to do. And again, I thought that Colorado at least had Power 5 athletes. You saw them make some plays. But, Derek, the one thing I couldn't understand is after that interception early on, and we'll get to the passing game here in a second, but Minnesota has the one deflect off Brevin Spanford's hands. The next drive, Minnesota just runs, I think, seven plays and for a touchdown. They run all seven times. And some of you may be thinking, well, yeah, PJ doesn't trust the pass. Oh, no. Derek, my question to you is, why was Colorado on again, the game is still wind with hand there. I think it's like 14-0 at that point. Why did Colorado just sit with two high safeties and it's 6-on-6 in the box? You've heard, if you've been listening to this podcast or you're brand new, you have heard Derek Burns harp for years. And I agree with him that Minnesota in even boxes should absolutely be running the ball. I think on all seven plays of that scoring drive, it was 6 versus 6 in the box. So, yeah, Minnesota is going to go 7 plays, 58 yards, and score a touchdown. I frankly couldn't understand what the Colorado defensive game plan was, and there may be no more specific play as well than that 3rd and 21 that Mo Ibrahim converts. You look at that from the TV copy, Derek. Mm-hmm. You can't even see the Colorado safeties. They're 25 yards deep. And they're in man coverage. Like, I have no as bad as Mike Sanford's offense was, and we'll get to it, I have no conceivable idea what the game plan was for Colorado. You know PJ Fleck offense wants to run the ball, and they just let them. I have no idea, Derek.
Explain well, yeah, from the best I could tell, this is kind of the progression of what happened. So We've mentioned that the challenge in stopping Minnesota's run game is what do? Do you bring an extra defender in the box? Do you move the front? There are various tactics you can employ. What Colorado decided they wanted to do was instead of line up an extra box defender pre-snap. So if you do that, when Tanner looks over to the sidelines, they're going to get a different play in depending on if the box is loaded or not. So they didn't want to load the box pre-snap. So what they tried to do was play games with the slot defender and the safety to sometimes bring them in post snap and sometimes not. So trying to throw off the play calling essentially from the Gopher offense. But here's the problem. That's really what the RPO is set up for. So if you line up with an even box and you decide, okay, we're going to show an even box. We want you to run in to try and run into an even box, but we're going to bring, for example, a strong safety or a slot defender crashing down into the box post snap. Well, Tanner's going to see that in RPO. He's going to pull the ball out and he's going to throw the ball. So it's to the point, Ryan, where they tried different things to the movement that we mentioned, which is a high risk strategy, and it backfired on them. And then they did try and bring in some defenders post snap. But in those cases, Tanner's pulling the ball out and throwing it. And when they didn't bring in a box defender, as you mentioned, they ended up running into those even boxes and just really gashing them. So there was really nothing that the Colorado defense could do in this game to slow down the Gophers' rushing attack without taking some shots on the chin in the passing game.
All right. So watching this game, I was there live. My vantage point didn't give me an opportunity to really see stuff. So I rewatched the game last night and this morning. And I think the thing that I want to point out, and you've already kind of pointed it out, Ryan, is it's just really refreshing how with Kirk Shiraka, he doesn't have a clamp on him that we're just going to run the ball. And he's just literally taking what the defense can give them. You pointed that out with the 7-play all run touchdown drive. But just the fact that they're just taking what the defense defense gives them, and being able to execute has been really fun to watch. The other thing I wanted to point out too, as we kind of transition the conversation, is what a day from Mo Ibrahim, right? 23 carries, 202 yards, 8.8 yard average, and 3 touchdowns. He just had a phenomenal day and basically set himself up as, you know, one of the top running backs in the Big Ten. He made no mistake about that. Just a wonderful outing from him and from that offensive line, Derek.
Yeah, just a quick, you know, cannot forget to talk about Mo. I'm glad you brought it up. The yards after contact continues to just be absurd with Mo. His obviously low center of gravity, his ability to stay on his feet, as evidenced by the 18-yard touchdown in the first half, he's on another level. We questioned, I think rightfully so, how he would look coming off an Achilles injury. And I'll say it again, through three games, I think he looks better than he was before the Achilles injury. And then on the offensive line, I did want to give a couple shout outs. I thought again that this offensive line as a unit handled movement from the defensive front as well as we've seen out of a non-conference opponent. I thought that Nathan Bowe did a really good job stepping up when Axel Rushmeyer went down. You know, Nathan had struggled previously with some mobility issues, but he's a guy that, this is the fun thing about watching college football. The players improved. If they're developed and coached well from season to season, it's fun to see that improvement. He's a guy, if you go back and watch that 18-yard touchdown run from Mo that we just referenced, watch Nathan Bowe's block in that play, getting to the second level and just driving his linebacker, you know, 10, 12, 13 yards off of the ball was fun to see. So overall, as an offensive line, again, a very good day picking up that movement and opening up those huge lanes for the Gopher running backs.
I mean, what is there to, you know, I feel like we're going to continue to talk about it every week, because I'm now at the point where I'm thinking to myself, I mean, how long until we actually start to have the conversation, and maybe we start it now, that Mo's 24 number needs to be retired? Like, he's got 40 rushing touchdowns now, tying Darrell Thompson for the all-time Gopher rushing record. And oh, by the way, boys, he's done it on 13 less games than Darrell Thompson. Like, he's got 40 rushing touchdowns in 31 games. It took DT 44 games to get to his 40. So essentially in an extra season. Mo's now has over 600 collegiate carries. He's averaging almost 5.7 yards per carry. I mean, he is just the absolute king of yards after contact, specifically after first contact. And again, Derek references that Nathan Bowe block on, I think it was the second touchdown, the one from 18 yards out, where, again, he just gets lower. He is the king for someone who is only 5'8", probably. He knows how to play, and something that Kenny Burns and PJ Fleck talk about all the time is he plays behind his pads. And I think one of the ways you can illustrate that is you see him get to that safety at the last level, and he gets lower than the safety. I mean, that allows him to maintain his balance. That allows him to continue to run, and he obviously gets some help from Michael Brown-Stevens, Nick Kallerup, Dalen Wright, Ariante Ursary as they push him into the end zone. But I think there's no more valuable player on this team, and we'll get to the Chris Ottman Bell stuff here in a second, than Mo Ibrahim. This is a run first team that is going to run Mo into the ground, and Mo is definitely okay with that. And I just, you know, I kind of joked about it before the season, Luke, and in my bold predictions where I said Mo Ibrahim should get Heisman votes or could get Heisman votes. Well, I was only half being bold about that. Full transparency here, folks. You know, in the Cleveland.com poll before the year, you get to vote for your offensive players of the year. You get three choices. I put Mo Ibrahim as number two, because in that scenario, Minnesota's in Indianapolis. And if Minnesota's in Indianapolis, it's going to be because Mo Ibrahim has a season to remember. Now, he's already had quite the career, but I think you can see that, I mean, what he's doing right now is incredibly special, and he's going to need to continue to do that for the next 9 games if Minnesota's going to get to Indy. But, Derek, I thought Quinn Carroll, you know, I still certainly have my hesitations about what it's going to look like in pass pro or just against smaller, quicker defenders. You saw that on the tackle for loss on one of the drives in the second quarter. But this offensive line is just playing. I'm not accustomed to seeing this early in a season a Gopher offensive line handle as many stunts and twists as well as they have been. And you mentioned Nathan Bowe coming in for Axel Rushmeyer. I watched back that whole first series where Axel was in. He started, played 9 snaps on that scoring drive. I have no idea what he did to re-aggravate what I assume is that injury he sustained against Western Illinois. But, I mean, he didn't play the rest of the game. He was I remember seeing him on the sidelines with his helmet. But, I mean, I thought Nathan Bowe played remarkably well. You know, I think he was at the level of Axel Rushmeyer, if not a little better. It's just, you know, I am very intrigued, you know, before we switch to the passing game here, Luke, to see what it looks like against Big Ten defense next week. I mean, I think for this offensive line specifically, and we'll get into it in the preview, Jacoby Windham is going to be the biggest test certainly to date. 2-time Big Ten player of the week already on defense for Michigan State. He is a fantastic edge rusher, and I am very curious to see what Kirk Ciarrocca and Brian Callahan come up as they try to neutralize him.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the passing game on the day. Tanner Morgan, 11 of 16, 157 yards, 3 touchdowns and an interception. Easily could have been 12 of 16 with no interception. Well, I wouldn't put that one on him. But, you know, on the day two, one thing to point out is they distributed the ball pretty evenly. Brevin Spanford and Chris Ottman-Bell each getting 3 catches, but 6 guys catching balls on the day. It's important to be able to spread out the ball. And at least 3 guys had explosive plays: Ottman-Bell, Daylon Wright, and Daniel Jackson on each a reception. So in general, a decent showing from the passing game. Could it have been better? Sure. But in the same stretch, you're up 35-0 at halftime. You didn't have to show a ton. They didn't show a ton. Ultimately, they made efficient work. They'll get better. I'm encouraged by seeing some of these explosive plays, Derek.
Yeah, I was going to mention that a couple of things notable in the passing game. The depth of target continues to be impressive, and I think something that they're working on. You know, as Ryan mentioned, Colorado started the game trying to play man coverage. They got out of that rather quickly because of the way that Kirk Ciarrocca adjusted, and they ended up playing more zone coverage as the game went on. So it was nothing that fazed Tanner or the passing offense to going from some of the man busters to zone routes. And the other notable thing I would say is, although Tanner, kind of a head scratcher, struggled, he missed his spots on a couple of easy throws, but I would also say some of his best throws were very, very difficult throws. The touchdown pass to Clay Geary and the touchdown pass to Chris Ottman-Bell, those are really difficult throws. You know, Clay's is completely across the field. He's got a very narrow window to hit in the corner of the end zone. He hits it spot on, and then of course dropping it in the bucket to Chris Ottman-Bell on the long touchdown, that also is a window you could easily overthrow that, or of course in an underthrow situation that's an incomplete or interception. So although he missed a couple spots on the easier throws underneath, his down the field passing was extremely accurate and pretty sharp, and again from a mental perspective didn't have any problems adjusting from man to zone coverage as the game went on.
I'm just so incredibly bored of the, you know, bench Tanner movement I see during games on Twitter when he misses a throw. I'm just so incredibly over it. Like, I look at Tanner Morgan here in the non-conference, and trust me, I understand he's played 3 horrible defenses, but we're talking about a guy who has a 69% completion percentage, 4 touchdowns, an interception that was a deflected ball. And I mean, some of the throws, I mean, to Derek's point, of all the throws Tanner had yesterday, why he was missing on short crossing routes but then could drop it into a bucket 20-plus yards down the field, you've got me. I don't know why. You know, I don't know if he's thinking too much on those ones. The one to Brevin, which was behind him, but Brevin should have caught it. You can also say it should have been a better pass. I think both statements can be true. I mean, Brevin should have caught it. Tanner should have thrown it ahead of him. None of that would have mattered. You know, the Chris Ottman-Bell injury play, it was a little high. I mean, Chris still easily gets a hand on it, and then it's just unfortunate that Chris is injured on that play. But I mean, some of the throws he made yesterday, those 3 touchdown throws were insane. Like, I you look at the Chris Ottman-Bell one, that was the easiest of the 3, and he hit him in stride 45 yards down the field. Like, the anticipatory deep throws Tanner has been really good at. The back shoulder throw to Daylon Wright, like, you couldn't place that ball in a better spot for Dalen to be the only one that can make a play on that. Now, it's an insane catch by Dalen Wright, but both statements, again, can be true. Tanner Morgan with a great throw and an even better catch from Dalen Wright, or even the Clay Geary touchdown where you can't put that ball in a better spot. Now, we're going to want to see that against Michigan State, Purdue, Illinois the next three games, but I mean, Pro Football Focus isn't the end-all be-all, but they have been incredibly bullish on Tanner's performance through 3 weeks, and I would agree with them more or less. I understand that, Luke, you and I think, Derek, we've talked about this, is I understand that my, you know, me saying I'm bored of the bench Tanner stuff, and I think it's coming from the casual fan that interacts with me on Twitter who only watches NFL, and they're not out here watching, you know, Purdue, Syracuse, or Northwestern lose to Southern Illinois, and they don't have a better kind of grasp of what Big Ten quarterback play is like. But I'm just sitting here thinking, I mean, how many Big Ten West teams would be killing to have Tanner at this point? Now, you know, you hope he would look this way, and year five is the starter, and we're going to find out a lot more here about how much can Tanner by himself kind of elevate a passing game without Ottman Bell. But I just continue to be – Tanner's not without, you know, misses. We've saw a few misses yesterday. But, I mean, again, we're talking about a guy with a 69% completion percentage. And to Derek's point, these aren't dinks and dunks. His average depth of target on 58 dropbacks so far is double-digit yards. So – he's throwing the ball on average 10.6 yards down the field through three games. This isn't Captain Checkdown. This isn't Donovan McNabb with the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota's moving the ball, you know, 10-plus yards down the field per throw. Now it's, can he do that against a Michigan State secondary that, well, I think it's better than last year. I mean, it's certainly a spot where if you're going to pick a spot to attack Michigan State, it'd be one. But Luke, I think we have to address the elephant in the room at the time right now.
Yeah, so Chris Ottman-Bell goes down on an injury, a non-contact injury to be more specific, on a ball that he got a hand on but wasn't able to reel in. Ultimately was taken off under the help of trainers. It sounded like, at least from the press conference, that he was at the hospital getting some imaging done. You know, natural suspicion would be a knee, maybe an ankle. You know, the knee could be a number of different ligaments, etc. So we don't really know anything as we record now. But let's just take the conversation, guys, from the standpoint of that we're definitely not going to have Chris for the game against Michigan State, and very possibly not for the rest of the season. So, Derek, what kind of changes are we going to have to see from this Gopher offense, and who's going to have to step up?
Yeah, well, I can touch maybe on the X's and O's portion, and Ryan and I texted earlier, and he has, I believe, a really good take on what needs to be done in terms of guys stepping up. So I'm, you know, this is, in my opinion, this is big, obviously not just because Chris is wide receiver one, but from an X's and O's standpoint, what concerns me about this is Chris is he is the Gophers' best target in the end zone. He's the best target for the Gophers in 50-50 balls, and he's the best target for the Gophers as a third down possession receiver, as a big receiver who knows how to use his body in tight coverage, and they are going to need those skills. Now, I'm not saying they don't have that, and Ryan can touch on kind of what needs to be done, but those are three areas. You know, we're all very pleased with the way the non-conference has gone, and we're all very high on this Gophers team, but I think it's realistic to expect that in at least a handful of games against these Big Ten defenses, there are going to be defenses that are going to do everything they can to slow down the running game and force the Gophers to pass the ball and force them to pass the ball into very good coverage. So we've seen this, it happens every year, and they're going to need those receivers that aren't able to just get open, but perhaps come down with the ball in coverage on a crucial third down, things like that. I think that's where they're going to miss him the most.
Yeah, Derek and I were talking yesterday, and I think now that I've had almost 24 hours to kind of digest the whole Chris Ottman-Bell thing, which Luke alluded to it, as we sit here Sunday at 2 p.m. to date us here, we haven't heard the definitive word. The team doesn't know anything. look, here's what I'd say is anytime a guy immediately gets sent to the hospital for more imaging that can't be done, that they already had done at the University of Minnesota, and then you send them to a second location for more imaging, I think we're all smart enough here to connect the dots. So we will get PJ Fleck 10 a.m. Monday morning. So maybe by the time you're listening to this, you know, check my Twitter. We'll know one way or another about Ottman Bell's status. But let's say that he, for it, for now, I'm not going, I mean, I'm going to assume he's not playing Michigan State. Now, where I'm going with this is if you had to pick a position group that one of these is going to happen to, you know, Derek and I disagree on this, and that's okay. But for a run-centric team, I would argue that while you never would want to lose a Chris Ottman Bell, this would be the spot. I would not want to lose Mo Ibrahim again, especially the way he's playing. I wouldn't want to lose John Michael Schmitz. I think he's the linchpin to that offensive line. I mean, I think he's the best center Minnesota's had since Greg Eschlinger. And then I would not want to lose Tanner Morgan as a fifth-year starter. Peace and love to you if you think that the Greek rifle should be the guy right now. I think you're, you know, you're a year away. But the other take I have here is I'm glad that it's 2022 and this happened and not 2021. And what I mean by that is there shouldn't be a big excuse here if you're Matt Simon and Kirk Schrock and PJ Fleck, because last year we saw the struggles. Well, there's a reason they went through all the struggles to get to 2022. Now we saw Michael Brown Stevens and Daniel Jackson and Dalen Wright in 2021 get all their first real extended game action. You saw Brevin Span Ford be eased into the passing game tree at the end of 2021. Well, now it's 2022, and we're talking about Brevin Span Ford in year five, Dalen Wright and Michael Brown Stevens in year four, Daniel Jackson in year three. I feel like I'm missing somebody here, but I mean, that's four guys right there that are third through fifth years in a collegiate program. Now, do they have the amount of big game experience or big game reps that you want? No. But we're talking about guys that aren't teenagers anymore. And we're not talking about Dalen Wright as somebody as a theoretical anymore. It's time to take the training wheels off for him. Because that's the reality is you're going to need some version of Dalen Wright. And I'll remind people, Dalen Wright has played 30-plus snaps in the opening three games for Minnesota. That is the most snaps he's ever played in a three-game stretch in his career. Like, they were already easing him in, but now it's time to feature him a little bit more. I would argue there is absolutely zero excuse now for Brevin Span Ford to not get five targets a game. He's the best pass-catching tight end they've had since Max Williams. I understand he had the one behind him clank off his hands for an interception. It's unfortunate because largely Brevin has been playing really well. I mean, I've been impressed with Brevin as a run blocker, which I didn't know that I was ever going to utter those words out of my mouth, considering the struggles we've seen him have. But he has bought in fully there. And then you saw after the deflected interception there, he came back with two contested catches across the middle. He's a guy that needs to, you know, if I was Kirk Schrocka, knowing that Chris Ottman Bell is probably going to be out for a while, like, I would go back to my 2020 tape at Penn State and think about how can we feature Brevin like Pat Freiermuth in the passing game? Because the reality is you can't tell me a plausible scenario that Brevin shouldn't be top three on this team in targets. Like, the only other person I would want to see get more run would probably be Dalen Wright, just because, again, you never know what's going to happen. And to Derek's point, Chris Ottman Bell is the best 50-50 ball winner I've seen from a Gopher receiver. And I thought really highly of Tyler Johnson. It's just, you know, I think Dalen Wright has that ability. I think Brevin has that ability, but we need to see it consistently. Whereas you knew a 50-50 ball with Chris Ottman Bell wasn't truly 50-50. It was 75-25 Chris or 80-20 Chris. And that's what he was really good at. And they're going to need Daniel Jackson, who played 20 plus snaps yesterday, to step up. Saw him with a couple first down catches. Michael Brown Stevens led the wide receiver core with 55 snaps yesterday, but that man was out there running wind sprints with no targets on 55 snaps. I mean, maybe Clay Geary, again, I think the internet and maybe Gopher Twitter are higher on Clay Geary than I am. I just don't know what type of expectations to put on a seventh year senior as a slot guy. It's just, they're going to need, if Clay Geary is your leading receiver in a Big Ten game, I would love to know what the score of that game is. I think Clay can be a good complimentary piece, but I don't know that he's a guy that you can want to feature a ton. But the point remains, like, this is still a run first team. You still have Tanner Morgan as a fifth year guy who, I mean, there's going to be more expectations placed on him to kind of continue to have this passing game kind of hum along and continue to elevate itself. But I understand that. I mean, I'm as curious as all of you, because we're talking about a lot of theoreticals. Like, Chris ain't going to be there probably now to be the what now? Well, it's not going to be just one guy is going to be the alpha. That can't be the answer. I don't think it should be the answer. It should be Dalen Wright should be the guy 1 week. Brevin should be the guy 1 week. Daniel Jackson, Michael Brown Stevens, Clay Geary, maybe Lameki Brockington. I mean, it's just you have to do more things and be creative, because I don't think you have that, you know, alpha guy ready to go here in 2022, but a collective effort should be the answer. And, you know, prayers up for Chris is, again, it's unfortunate. I've watched that play back, Luke, about 15 times, and it's just, you know, the ball's in front of him. He reaches his left hand as he's running out, and it's not like he contorts weird. He just puts some weight on that right leg, and he knows immediately, and he's down to the ground grabbing his shin. So, once again, I'm not anticipating at all that Chris Hotman-Bell is going to be playing for Michigan State. By the time you listen to this, we probably will have word from PJ Fleck on Monday. But, I mean, it's obviously very unfortunate, but this shouldn't be for this style of offense with what they have with playmakers elsewhere, fellas, one that should deter me from thinking this is still, you know, this is still a team that can definitely get to Indianapolis.
Yeah, I mean, I probably agree more with Derek that that losing Chris is a really big loss, just given, you know, the contested catch nature. But the other thing that I do want to point out is I've been pretty impressed with their ability to distribute the ball. And I know that they haven't played great competition, so maybe this will regress to the mean a little bit. But this last game was the lowest number of guys getting receptions. And they've worked in the running backs. I think I trust Kirk Schrock will find a way to get guys involved. They do have a number of weapons, maybe, you know, none probably as good as Chris or as consistent as Chris. But in the end of the day, Derek, I feel confident with Shiraka there, and they're going to find a way to spread the ball out.
Yeah. You bring up a good point, and they have spread the ball around more than we've ever seen in the past, particularly with Kirk, you know, and the way he's done it. And I think he is trying to do things that he did, for example, with Pat Freiermuth. You know, when Colorado went to a zone scheme, they had Brevin there in the finding the zone pocket, and that, you know, Brevin may become their third down go-to in contested situations. If they can get him mismatched on a defender, he may be the guy. If nothing else, it is good that they've gotten reps. They've been actively working on the passing game and spreading the ball around. And I think Ryan's spot on in that it's not one person by any means that's going to fill, you know, try and step up and fill in the void. It's going to have to be from a team, and they're going to have to grow up fast.
Okay, Ryan, one final question for you. Who gets more snaps if Chris is out for an extended period, in your opinion?
Well, that's the good question is... And why I hesitate to and pause here is I really want to know what Minnesota does in the slot now. I say that because Daniel Jackson's back from injury, and I'll remind people that Daniel Jackson played like 70% of the snaps for Minnesota in the slot last year. Now, I understand that each year is its own entity, plus Clay Geary is back, and he is a slot receiver only. So what does Minnesota try to do here? Because I think if you're going to have two guys out wide, Minnesota continues to be infatuated with Michael Brown Stevens. I mean, that's why he continues to lead the team in snaps. But I think I would say like Dalen Wright, but folks, he's already playing a ton of snaps. It's not like, I mean, he's been like second, I think, in a couple straight games now in wide receiver snaps. But my question is, what do they do now that Daniel Jackson's back? And I mean, things are obviously going to tighten up. You're not going to see the Quentin Reddings and the Dino Calliakmanises of the world, but I think Lameki Brockington has earned himself a role potentially out wide. You've seen him mix in quite a bit, but my guess would be the discernible difference is you'll see more Daniel Jackson probably out wide, more Clay Geary in the slot at times, along with, I think Brevin's going to play quite a bit in the slot too. But I'm interested to see if maybe Lameki Brockington, who has played a lot, more than I definitely thought coming in. I mean, I think there were at least one or two games that he was the first outside wide receiver to rotate in. I mean, if he can provide them something, that would be something I'm going to keep an eye on. But Luke, I mean, that's a great question. It's one thing I will absolutely be watching in that Michigan State game next weekend.
The Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. And Ryan, the Goal Line Club supports Gopher football. And I actually learned this Saturday that they support Gopher football in many ways that most people don't know. I know we've talked about they've donated jackets and these sorts of things to help people that are traveling, you know, for visits that may not have warm jackets. But as I was sitting at the game, I noticed that there is this digital down and distance sign there on the sidelines. And I was really close and I was like, man, that's pretty awesome. I've seen those elsewhere, but this is the first time I'm seeing them at a Gopher game, and I learned that's something that the Goal Line Club donated the money for to Gopher football. So if you want to support Gopher football, you got to support the Goal Line Club.
And to do so, once again, you go to goallineclub.org/memberships. $100. Again, all of it goes to things like this for the Gopher football program. And if you have some questions about the Goal Line Club before you join, shoot an email to info@goallineclub.org, and they will get back to you ASAP.
All right, let's talk about when this Gopher defense was on the field against this Mike Sanford offense. This was billed to be quite the prize fight by Mr. Ryan Burns. Happened to be that the Buffaloes were only able to sustain 7 points to the Gophers 49, so the prize fight was not. But Deion Smith really had quite the outing running the ball against the second stringers, which really pushed up their statistics, so it didn't look nearly as bad. Ryan, I think the big takeaway for me was it was like something like 25 or 28 total yards in total offense, Ryan, in the first half with 0 points for Colorado. And then I think the other thing we have to note as well is, you know, a big play by Terrell Smith with the blitz early to force a turnover. I mean, kudos to a guy that could have transferred. I said this earlier in the season, but I'm so excited for him that he's been able to see a lot of success here in the non-conference. You know, given all the opportunities that, you know, with the transfer portal provides, he stuck it out and he's gotten an opportunity. He's starting, he's playing really well. But wow, this Gopher defense, Ryan, just really made a statement early on.
First play of the game, Joe Rossi sends Terrell Smith on a corner blitz. He dips his shoulder around the running back, gets a strip sack. Minnesota gets a fumble. Jalen Logan Redding recovers. It's like, first rung, ding, 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 and Joe Rossi says, let me put you in your place there, little brother. Just right cross down to the mat. I mean, I just love storylines in a very boring 27-28 point spread. And, I mean, this Colorado offense is horrible. I mentioned it earlier. I don't think Carl Dorrell is the head coach for the Colorado Buffaloes much longer. Luke, we might be in a world here very soon where Mike Sanford is the interim head coach for the Colorado Buffaloes the rest of the season.
Who says it's not going to be Clay Patterson, honestly?
I would just say they're going to go with the guy with head coaching experience right at the FBS level, but I get what you're saying. And that's where what do you learn from a game like this? I mean, I learned that against Power 5 athletes, Ja Joyner continues to flash. I think he had 3 pressures on 7 pass rushing snaps. Now, I would have loved to seen him got home on that second one where he's right there in the lap of the quarterback, can't exactly corral him to the ground, but I continue to be encouraged by him. Thomas Rush and Danny Strigow, you know, it's a bold move by Colorado for their protection to not block Danny Strigow straight off the edge, and he gets the easiest sack of his life. But I am incredibly interested to see this secondary against Michigan State and then Purdue, because Minnesota continues to put their corners, and I think in a lot of situations where they're putting a lot of trust in them. You know, I thought Michael Dixon played really well in coverage yesterday. I loved his recovery on that flea flicker. I don't think you could have played that any better than what he did. You also saw him with another pass breakup, 9 pass breakups on the day. I wish he could have corralled that one across the middle. That could have been an interception. But I mean, they're going to get tested now. I mean, we're going to find out how good is Terrell Smith, because he's played really well through three games. I mean, if you wanted to know if the light's going to stay on for Terrell Smith, well, we're going to find out in the next two games. But you couldn't have asked for a better non-conference for that young man, who has had the diving interception, has the strip sack on the first play of the game. His confidence has to be at an all-time high, which is where it needs to be going into these two games. So, I mean, by the way, Mariano played really well. I continue to be impressed. Again, it's funny to watch here in the non-conference. They have taken him off at times just to give Cody Lindenberg some snaps alongside Braylon in case of the what if of an injury get, you know, happens during Big Ten play, that they don't have to throw those two out alongside each other for the first time in a Big Ten game. But I mean, Minnesota's, if my big takeaway, Luke, and I'll be curious for Derek's, is each level of the defense continues to do their job. And when you're doing your job in a schematically sound defense and you have the athletes to do your job, I mean, good things happen. And that's where the defensive line is setting edges. They're allowing their linebackers to flow through. That allows Tyler Newbin to come up and plank plays. The corners continue to tackle well in space. Guys like Beanie Bishop and Terrell Smith. I mean, again, these are Power 5 athletes. Now, they're not great Power 5 athletes. Again, I'm not trying to tell you Colorado's a world beater, because they're not. But it's just refreshing to know, like, they, I mean, I look at the stats through three quarters and Minnesota actually had their starters in. Like, Colorado had 91 total yards. They were 1 of 9 on third down. Like, they had 34 passing yards and were completing 33% of their passes. Like, we're going to find out a lot more about this defense in the next 2 weeks. I get it, Derek, but another very sound performance from all levels of the Gopher defense.
Yeah, I think the thing to watch from the Gopher defense going forward is they've spent a lot of time in this non-conference working on pressures. In the previous two games, they've worked on a bunch of man pressures. This game, they worked on a lot of zone pressure. So whether that's a blitz, a corner crash, as we mentioned, for the strip sack, twisting on the front four or their front seven, and with, in this game, leaving zone coverage behind it. So the question is that going to continue as we move forward? Because against these inferior opponents, they don't need to work on those, frankly. I don't want to sound too arrogant as a Gopher fan here, but they could have played Colorado head up and done just fine. So they're actively working on those pressures. And I think, Ryan, it's a result of what you've mentioned, which is they have more confidence in this secondary playing in coverage than they have previously. You know, if you don't have that level of confidence, you aren't going to play a higher risk strategy with your front seven, because you're leaving your coverage on an island. And I think at this point, they have become more comfortable. So if you're a Gopher fan, you know, where this is going to potentially pay dividends are on things like third downs against this Big Ten competition that's coming, to be able to get some pressure, force the quarterback to get the ball out earlier and potentially make mistakes with the ball, which would end up with turnovers. That's, I think, a new phase that we haven't seen the button pushed on much in the past. Joe Rossi's very good at disguising coverages, very good at sitting back and dialing up, you know, maybe rushing four and dialing up some unique coverage schemes to confuse quarterbacks. And that's worked very well. But this new dimension of pressuring the quarterback that they're working on to try and get the ball out quicker and potentially force that quarterback into a mistake is something I think Gopher fans should keep an eye on going forward.
Okay, one thing that kind of stuck out to me, and it correlates well with the point that you were making, was they were able to finish plays. You know, you think about the Danny Strigow runs free, ends up able to make that sack. This was the highest number of sacks they've had this season with three. At least I tried to do a quick double check. I'm pretty sure that's correct. And I was impressed with that, and it's good to see that they're doing that. I recognize that this is against an inferior opponent and the game script is all off kilter and to their advantage, but it's nice to see that they're slowly making some progress, where we saw them miss opportunities to make sacks previously, and they were able to execute it on a couple different occasions in this game. Defensively, though, the other thing to note is we wrap up a non-conference slate, and the Gophers didn't give up more than 10 points in the entire non-conference season. Again, we are always going to put the qualifier that it wasn't great competition, but 17 total points is nothing to balk at, even in college football, Derek. Pretty impressive feat for this defense so far.
Yeah, it's interesting when you see look around in Power 5 football at these non-conference games, and generally you do see some of these, call them inferior opponents scoring, but many times it doesn't take much for, the opponent to, I think, what did Ohio State put out 77 points, something 70, like yes. that. So, yeah, that's more typical of what you see in some of these Power 5 versus non-Power 5 matchups, or in this case, just a more inferior Power 5 opponent. Shutting opponents down to the level they have is rare to see against anybody, frankly. So I think there is something to be said about that, and it's been really three different approaches by three different teams offensively, and with none of them obviously having much success against the Gopher team. So it's exciting. They have a lot of athletes, particularly in the secondary, that, that level of athleticism back there is in speed. I think will be something fun to watch as we head into Big Ten play.
You also see that for the first time since I've been, again, my 12 years covering the team, I know probably not as long as some of the fans listening to this, but I mean, they didn't need their defense to play in the fourth quarter in any of the first three games. Like, that's how good the defense was. That's how inferior they made the inferior offenses look. And I've sat through a lot of Gopher defenses in yesteryear where, you're giving up 26 points to Miami of Ohio at home and having to sneak that one away. And, I mean, Joe Rossi's got all three levels playing very sound. Now, we mentioned it. Peyton Thorne, the Michigan State quarterback, is going to be the best quarterback they've played so far. Jarek Broussard and Jalen Berger, best running backs they've played. The skill position guys, I mean, you can essentially name any position group. I'm going to tell you, Michigan State's is going to be the best one they've faced, and you got to go on the road to do it. But I am very, very curious. Now, the Vegas Lions have come out for this game. I think it's essentially a pick of Michigan State -1. But it's just, we're going to learn a lot more. I think we've learned some, but we're going to learn how good this secondary is, because I anticipate Minnesota being able to stop the run. They've done it pretty consistently under Joe Rossi. But we're going to find out how good is Terrell Smith. How good is Tyler Newbin, Ryan Stapp, Michael Dixon, Justin Wally, Beanie Bishop, because they're going to get tested on Saturday. And I can assure you, Joe Rossi kind of wants to find out too. I think he knows they're good. We're going to find out how good against Michigan State. And then in 2 weeks, I didn't know that I was going to be uttering these words 3 weeks ago, Luke, but I think the best receiver that Minnesota faces all year is Charlie Jones. And what he's doing at Purdue and Jeff Brohm's scheme is unbelievable. So it's going to be a mighty test for the secondary the next 2 weeks.
So for as well as the special teams, or no, the defense played, the special teams wasn't exactly something to fawn over, Mr. Ryan Burns. And I know you enjoy a good soapbox to stand on and relay your feelings to the listeners when it comes to special teams. So the floor is yours, my friend.
I would just say Rob Wenger's special teams continue to not be special. Two penalties. One's a Jalen Glaze holding on a punt return. More net field position lost. Another flag with a false start. I had some people try to tell me that was going to be a fake punt to Tyler Newbin. I watched that back. I don't think it was. We have very different opinions if you think that was going to be a fake punt to him. But I understand there's some Mark Crawford defenders out there that, Minnesota's off. Here's a good one, Luke. Because Minnesota's offense has been so good, people think that Mark Crawford's rusty, which is why the 24-yard punt makes sense. I'm thinking to myself, it's like, what? Like a 24-yard punt when you're backed up on your own end.
He just mishit that one.
I mean, we saw Quentin Redding return some punts.
Quentin Redding's been secure-handed. He hasn't exactly, busted anything for like a 10, 15-yard gain. But, yeah, he's been pretty secure so far. I'm going to knock on wood real quick. Hold on.
Okay. I just like look at the next three games for Minnesota, Michigan State, Purdue, and then Illinois. And again, I continue to be very bullish on what I think Illinois could potentially be in the West here with future Colorado coach Ryan Walters. But you're going to need at some point, Rob Wenger, your special teams to actually help the team. I know, novel concept in field position with returns, not committing penalties. And I hope that is next week because, again, you look at the spread, coin flip type of game according to Vegas.
Yeah.
You know where that coin flip tends to get a little bit more weighted? Special teams. So we're going to find out. Again, not a whole lot to gain from, like, Matthew Trickett because they went 7-for-7 on extra points. But a 24-yard punt when you're backed up in your own end plus two flags, I mean –
I hear you, man. Okay, I do need to add some comments here on special teams. Number one, I attended this game with Gopher Illustrated's Owen Leap. He was nice enough to invite me, so I sat there and he commented, "Man, you really pay attention to special teams more than anyone I've ever sat with, specifically when it comes to kicks." I'm going to tell you guys right now, Dragan Kesic has been really good on kickoffs. I've been very, very impressed with him. Most of it's been kicking it deep, but he gets very good hang time on those balls. I've been pretty impressed there. I don't know, Derek, if you have anything else you want to add.
Yeah, I was gonna. You stole my thunder. That's been the one bright spot. And they also have had him do a couple of box kicks, which is not kicking it out of the back of the end zone, just to work on it. And those have been pretty good too. We might have seen our first non-punt safe return when Colorado punted on their own, or excuse me, on the Gophers' side of the field. It looked like that may have been a bit of a punt blocked attempt. So something to keep an eye on. And
only
nothing.
Took 6 years, Derek, to see that.
Yeah. Wow. Maybe. We don't know. We don't know what the play was, but it looked a little different than their normal punt safe return. So they got a rep in on that at least. And so maybe something to look for going forward.
Also note, Brady Weeks has been pretty good through the non-conference thus far, as memory serves right now. And the other thing is, like, I was very close to the Gopher sideline and he was not as big as I was anticipating. I had not seen him in person that close before, but he does a really nice job. But yes, there are good reasons to be complaining about special teams that, you know, we've been doing it for years and years and years, and Mr. Burns owns the right to complain the most. It's his brand that he has to protect.
I'm not even like asking for them to be good at this point. I have fully waved the right, like the white flag is out. I don't care. Like, just be average. I'm just tired of watching Gopher football games and thinking to myself, like, a Colorado's punter was horrible. Peace and love to that young man. He was brutal, but it's just, do something. I turned to somebody in the press box on Saturday and I was just like, it's year six with Wenger. Like, when are we going to turn to each other? We haven't done this since 2018 Wisconsin. That's 4 years ago. What have you done for me in the last 3 years where we can turn and look at one another and say, you know what special teams did? They helped win that game. Like, Dragan Kesic, I love that guy. Like, he's a great media personality, by the way. And he's also got a leg. I mean, but it's just the punting and the lack of returns. And it's just, we'll find out if, you know, again, Minnesota eventually is not going to be one of the most efficient offenses in college football with turning red zone possessions into touchdowns. So we'll see Matthew Trickett here more, I would guess, very, very soon. But it's just, I hope next week is the week. And if it is, I will have in the intro, this is your Rob Wenger leader, the Gopher Gridiron Radio Podcast. If special teams plays an integral part for once in the last 4 years of doing something to help this team.
Legacy in Life Law brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. For the most important times in your life, for the most important people in your life, they can be a law firm to represent you. So if you have things like estates, if you have business planning, you know, life transition, etc., make sure to reach out to Legacy in Life Law. They can represent you here in Minnesota as well as Illinois. They have partners here in Minnesota, but make sure that you reach out to them. They have clients as far north as Roseau, Ryan. And what do they have going on this week for their big event?
Yes, this weekend at Elk Grove Village, which for those of you in the Chicago area, the Kenosha area, the Milwaukee area, if you want to get together and watch a big Gopher football game, they're going to be hosting a watch party at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. They're going to have some free appetizers starting around 2 p.m. They're going to have a raffle for a signed Chris Otten and Bell shirt. Again, sounds like an awesome opportunity to get together with some Gopher fans and support us here at Gopher Gridiron Radio.
Longtime sponsor of Burns Insurance brings you the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. And Ryan, we know that Bill likes to shop, and he can shop for those in Minnesota, Wisconsin, North and South Dakota, and as well as Florida. Did I miss any?
The Burns Insurance Agency, Luke, is licensed in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, Florida, and Utah. And you mentioned it, the man loves to shop, but he also believes in service. And that's where it's not to be the biggest insurance agent in the world. I just saw him at the Gopher football game on Saturday. If you want to have a Gopher football fan, make sure that you're getting the best bang for your buck, whether it's your commercial, your home, your auto, your life, whatever type of insurance it may be, you think you're paying too much. I'll remind you again, the man is licensed not only in the state of Minnesota, but if you're listening to us in North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, Florida, or Utah, check them out at insurancebyburns.com or email him at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Big Ten this week. 13 games on the schedule. Many of these we won't go into much depth on, but we'll definitely touch on them. I guess the thing to take away from Toledo, Ohio State, 77 points tops the points on Saturday. Toledo puts up 21, but nothing too surprising there, Derek.
Yeah, it was. I think there were maybe some questions about Ohio State going into this, about Ohio State's offense, and there certainly aren't any coming out of it. They showed up big, and that was your quintessential Ohio State non-conference game, putting up huge chunk plays and a lot of scoring.
All right. Michigan wins 59-0. And the only question I have for you, Ryan Burns, was did you see the photo of the guy? I can't remember exactly what the score was going into the fourth quarter. I could look it up, but it doesn't make any sense to because it was such a drubbing. But there's a picture of a guy with his face painted for UConn, and he's just holding up the finger four entering the fourth quarter with, oh, man, it's brilliant. I'm going to find it and send it to you. Did you happen to see that?
I didn't see it, but God bless that UConn fan who got all jazzed up for Jim Mora's UConn Huskies team. You know, what I learned from that game is I think we're going to have to start talking about J.J. McCarthy a lot more. I know as somebody that, oh, good for me, votes for the Heisman, like Cade McNamara is going to be out for a couple weeks now. J.J. McCarthy has looked really good against really bad competition. I mean, if you want to draw comparisons between, like, we haven't learned a ton about Minnesota. What have we learned about Michigan from them playing three home games against Hawaii and Colorado State? Like, I think Michigan is still in that top tier with Ohio State. But if Michigan is going to potentially challenge Ohio State again, J.J. McCarthy is going to have to continue to look as good as what he has. The five-star kid, I think, is a 2020. I mean, I'm excited to continue to watch. Is J.J. McCarthy the real deal for the Wolverines?
All right, let's talk a little bit about Oklahoma, Nebraska. Not close at all. Ended up being 49-14. I think Ryan, you just mentioned that the defensive coordinator just got fired for Nebraska. That's probably no surprise to anyone. But again, if you thought that Nebraska was going to find some glimmer of hope and pull the big upset on Oklahoma, it wasn't going to be on this day, Derek.
Yeah, if you're a Nebraska fan, they continue to show up. They open the game with a score. I think that injected a little bit of life and maybe a little bit of hope. And then unfortunately after that, it was an uphill battle for the Nebraska team. And in the defense, as evidenced by the firing, was just nowhere to be found. Once again, an opponent basically was able to move the ball up and down the field at will and scored really as much as they wanted. So big changes ahead for Nebraska and their fan base. That's for sure.
I'm just like, are we sure Nebraska has talent on defense? Are we? Because this isn't a good, I don't think it's a good Oklahoma offense. Like compared to the Lincoln Riley years, like it ain't. Like they still obviously have a lot of talent, but like to you, I mean, Derek, you touched on it. Opening two possessions. I mean, Oklahoma's scripted series goes like, I think, 5 and out. Nebraska scores, and you're thinking to yourself, maybe Mickey Joseph's got this. Nope. 49 consecutive points before Oklahoma's pulling starters in the third quarter in Memorial Stadium. Like, I don't know what happened with with their defensive coordinator, because they took a step forward last year. Now, Nebraska fans tried to tell me that losing some guys in the trenches up front didn't really matter. They lost a couple of guys to, like, Tennessee, among some other places. But it's just like, I will continue to kind of say this. My least favorite part of watching Nebraska right now is their secondary is the cockiest, horrible secondary I've ever seen. I have never seen a secondary miss as many tackles, blow as many coverages, and then make a tackle 8 yards down the field, so it's second and two, and then get up and talk mad crap to somebody or start flexing. Like, do they understand that they are getting absolutely boat raced, or that they gave up 500 plus total yards to Northwestern, who, oh, by the way, just lost to Southern Illinois?
Did you see too that Georgia Southern rode that momentum into a loss at UAB and they put up something like 600-ish yards on Nebraska, only put up 418 against UAB. Like, it ain't good in Nebraska, fellas.
Well, Mickey Joseph knows that if he is going to have any chance at this job, like, he had to fire like the defensive coordinator. I know he had some things with family related last year, and you hate to see that, but it's like, this defense is absolutely horrible. I mean, they're horrible. So you had to make some kind of change. And I'm just sitting here thinking, like, I don't know that you can continue. I mean, just Nebraska is just the dumpster fire that continues. I mean, now they're into a bye week. So it's like, if you were going to fire your D coordinator, now you got the bye week to kind of figure out who can actually play, who can't. Because it's not exactly murderer's row coming up for Nebraska in October. Indiana, Rutgers, Purdue, and Illinois. But we've also seen, since when can Nebraska get out of their own way, no matter who the coaching staff is?
Yeah, and I'm just curious to see, you know, we talked about it kind of at length last week, so we don't have to rehash it. But I just wanted to bring up one more time, I think there continues to be a disconnect between what some people think the Nebraska job is in 2022 and what it actually is. I'll stick my neck out and say, this is not a program, I don't believe, that is one or two steps away from being back to prominence. And I think that is the sentiment from some of the national media and some of the fan base. And I think they need a developer, and I think they need a complete rebuild.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Someone they might target is Washington Huskies coach Kalen DeBoer. They beat Michigan State 39-28. They were a 3.5-point favorite. Michael Penix Jr., really good on the day for them. We'll focus a little bit more on this game, fellas, just given it's the Gophers' next opponent. But, you know, on the day, Washington just kind of sliced him up, but man, it was just a really good day for Michael Penix, Derek.
Yeah, it was. I was curious to take a close look at this game, being that it's the Gophers' next opponent. And, you know, my takeaways were Michael Penix with a good offensive line was really good. A lot of it was not dink and dunk, a lot of huge chunk passing plays into tight windows. And they got him protected, and he threw the ball from the first snap of the game on. He threw the ball downfield and really ended up dicing up that Michigan State defense. So that's something to look at. And I wasn't expecting that. And the other thing I would say is the physicality of that Washington team. You know, it was a home game. The crowd was really into it. The emotions were high. And I think Michigan State wanted to kind of bully their way on offense. Obviously, be physical, run the ball, you know, do what got them, you know, do what got them success last year. And they weren't, I mean, Washington's defense wasn't having any of it. They effectively out-physicaled Michigan State's offense. So I don't know how much you can draw. I do think that heading out west and playing a Power 5 Pac-12, good Pac-12 opponent on the road later in the day is a challenge. So I wouldn't look at the score and think that Michigan State isn't a good football team, but it was a good showing by the Washington team, that's for sure.
I just want to add a little bit more to this. You said, you know, the Michigan State wanted to run the ball on the day, 29 carries for 42 yards. Additionally, you know, to speak how explosive the Washington offense was, seven guys had explosive plays. Jalen Polk, six receptions, 153 yards and three touchdowns. You know, Washington bounced out early to a 22-0 lead. Michigan State found a way to get a touchdown, but it was 29. I think it was 29-8 or 20. Yeah, 29-8 at the half. And Michigan State had to claw back. And you know, they definitely changed their approach, Ryan, but it wasn't enough.
No. I mean, you mentioned the rushing. If you just look at the running backs, Jalen Berger and Jarek Broussard, which Jarek Broussard, you remember, 2020 Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. Jalen Berger, a four-star that went to Wisconsin, didn't work out there. They combined for 17 carries for 30 yards. Like, that's going to be your recipe. But I think Peyton Thorne, now again, I didn't watch the full game. I watched the condensed version back. And they're obviously only going to show the highlights as Michigan State roars back with 20 points in that second half to make it interesting. Like, Peyton Thorne is going to be a handful. Like, he is a big kid who can move around the pocket really well. And he's not a guy that's going to go down at the first sign of pressure. The first, you know, if you get a hand on him, he's not going to crumple. So I am very intrigued to kind of see how this plays out. And I will continue to say, you know, I got a lot more Michigan State tape to watch here Monday, Tuesday, before starting to kind of figure out my opinions about the Gophers versus Michigan State tape for this weekend. But I think this Michigan State secondary played a lot better than what, you know, 397 passing yards and four touchdowns would. Look, I'm not trying to tell you that they're the Legion of Boom, but I'm not trying to tell you, you know, I don't agree with that. They're like one of the worst secondaries in the Big Ten. I, you know, my thoughts were Michael Penix made a ton of tight window throws, like a ton of 50-50 type of throws. And it just felt like the Washington receivers were coming up like all of them. Now, the key is going to be the quick passing game for Minnesota, because Jacoby Windham scares the absolute daylights out of me. He is the two time. I mean, they've only played 3 weeks. I mean, you know, most teams have only played 3-4 games here in the Big Ten. Jacoby Windham, who Joe Rossi was trying to get Jacoby Windham is an edge guy, you know, kind of a outside linebacker edge type for Michigan State, two-time Big Ten Player of the Week already, was a UNLV transfer. Minnesota tried to get him. He ends up at Michigan State. Like, this dude is explosive and he can bend. And if there's just no way I can see Tanner Morgan holding on to the ball for 4 seconds and something good happening on Saturday, especially on the road. So it's going to be a really good test for Minnesota. Again, I understand that Michigan State goes from ranked 11th or 9th, depending on what poll you were looking at, to now unranked. I mean, they're the number 26 team in the country compared to what I think Minnesota's the number 32. But it's something to where this is still going to be a really good test for both teams, Luke.
Yeah, okay, let's talk a little bit about when, or not talk a little bit about when, but Penn State, Auburn. 41-12, Penn State runs away with a victory and the sweep of Auburn on back-to-back years. Definitely a big win for them. And Derek, I think they're sneaky better than I was suspecting. When I say them, I mean Penn State. I didn't think they were as good as at first glance, especially watching that Purdue tape. But you know, again, they're now 3-0 and have a win on the road in Auburn.
We questioned a couple weeks ago when or if Penn State was going to be able to run the ball. And not only did they run the ball well against Auburn, they had a ton of long runs against Auburn at Auburn. So is this the turnaround game for the running attack for Penn State? or is it an anomaly? That's something to look at. But they played well at an SEC opponent and dominated the game. Again, long run after long run on offense. And, you know, it'll be interesting to follow. I would agree with you, Luke. I think they're, you know, going into the season, I think most people had them as clearly the third best team in the East behind, you know, or maybe even some might say, you know, contending for that second spot. But, you know, and then there were questions about that after the Purdue game. But I think I agree with you. I think they're a little better than people think. And I think that their outcome on Saturday is probably evidence of that.
I also think we found out that I think Penn State found themselves a running back in Nick Singleton. That true freshman, I think he was a top 100 kid. I mean, you look at what he's done the last 2 weeks. Well, he's got three straight games of 10 carries. Didn't show a lot against Purdue. Against Ohio, 10 carries for 179 and 2. Against an SEC team, goes 10 for 124 and 2. I mean, this kid, I think, is going to be a really good running back for Penn State. And the thing with Penn State now is, number one, I don't think Auburn's a good team. But we're not going to learn anything about Penn State until 3 weeks from now when they play Michigan. They got Central Michigan at home next. Then they take on Northwestern, who we'll get to here in a second, before they have to travel to Ann Arbor before they play Minnesota in the whiteout game. It's going to be very interesting to see, because Sean Clifford didn't have to do anything in this game, more or less. I mean, he was just the game manager type. They did all their damage mostly on the ground there with 6 yards of carry, five rushing touchdowns. But I think Penn State kind of showed something in the SEC that going down into Auburn territory, winning by 30, is impressive.
Okay, Northwestern loses to Southern Illinois. The Salukis outscored Northwestern after a halftime tie, 17-10 to take a 31-24 victory. Ryan Helinski chucked it 43 times with 2 interceptions. Evan Hall had a formidable game with 25 carries and 124 yards. But fellas, this Northwestern team, after a win against Nebraska, just gave an 0-2 Salukis their first victory of the season. It's hard to know. I don't think this team's very good, Derek.
I think, yeah, it's things are broken at Northwestern. And not only have they dropped, you know, the bad losses that you talked about, but they've lost their identity. We've talked about it a couple weeks ago. Their defense that they've just hung their hat on for the last decade or more seems to be broken. And on the other side of the ball, they're curiously throwing the ball all kinds of, you know, as more than they normally would. They don't seem to have a lot of targets outside or offensive weapons outside of Evan Hall, who is very good, incidentally. But they've lost their way. Now, the skeptics and those who have watched Big Ten West football now for years would say they are well coached. Fitzgerald always seems to be able to write things. So is there some magic left in the hat for the second half of the season? I don't know, but it doesn't look good so far.
I just am like, this is a way worse loss, in my opinion, than Minnesota losing to Bowling Green. Like, Southern Illinois is a bad Missouri Valley team. Like, we can discuss the mediocre nature of Bowling Green and the MAC, but like, Northwestern had, I think, like 18 more scholarships available because FCS versus FBS. Southern Illinois was 0-2 with losses to non-powerhouses like Lamar and Southeast Missouri. And then Southern Illinois comes in here and, again, 261 yards, 3 passing touchdowns. I know that Northwestern had a lot of injuries in their secondary, but this, I'm telling you, this Northwestern team, I mean, it's just, again, I feel for Evan Hall. He lost another fumble in the fourth quarter. The back-to-back games that have kind of put Northwestern in a really tough spot. I mean, he's clearly been the alpha running back there between him and Cam Porter. But it's just like these untimely turnovers and the fact that they can't play defense either. You allowed 31 points to an 0-2 Missouri Valley team at home. I mean, it's just like, if Northwestern is that bad, I mean, what do we think about Nebraska at that point? So I don't know what to think. Now, I know the Northwestern players are coming out and saying, well, we got everything in front of us. You know, we're still 1-0 in the Big Ten season. I'm like, yeah, but boy, that October schedule for Northwestern: at Penn State versus Wisconsin, on the road in Maryland, who just beat SMU, and then you have to go on the road to Iowa. I understand that everything's in front of you, but if you have to have Ryan Helinski throw the ball 40 plus times a game because you can't run the ball against Southern Illinois, oh boy.
Okay, the game that at least I recall on the preview, Ryan, I was highlighting as maybe the game of the week. Syracuse knocks off Purdue 32-29. If you watch the first three quarters, you're probably thinking, "Come on, Luke, what a snoozer!" But the fourth quarter, 42 points scored between the respective teams. Purdue scoring 20 and Syracuse scoring 22. It just a barn burner of a fourth quarter, and Syracuse pulls out the win, and Purdue goes to 1-2 on the season, Derek.
Yeah, you covered it in that. Just very oddly, it was a very low scoring game. Now, I think the takeaway for 3.5 quarters. But I think the takeaway here for the Gopher coaching staff and Gopher fans are, I really felt like the Syracuse defensive coaching staff had a great recipe for the Purdue offense, and that was keep them – they're going to get yards, but keep them out of the end zone when they get in the red zone and keep them from chunk passing plays, which they did for 3.5 quarters. Now, at the end, Purdue ended up getting away with some, but, you know, when you play this Purdue high-powered, you know, passing offense, they are going to get yards. They're going to stretch your safeties. If you don't respect that, they'll try and hit you over the top. But if you stretch your safeties, they're gonna hit passes underneath. So I thought a very good game plan for 3.5 quarters from the Syracuse defensive staff, and that's something that I think the Gophers can take away. Now, there is the receiver that Ryan mentioned earlier. His name, Ryan, again?
Charlie Jones, Iowa transfer, baby.
Not Charlie Walters, like I said.
Yes, that's why I was confused. I was thinking of that previously. He is a monster. He is the best receiver I've seen in the Big Ten West so far this year. They target him. They find ways. He's filled in that alpha receiver role that Purdue seems to have each and every year. And he's the guy they go to. I mean, when they get backed up and it's third and long or key situation or they need a big play, he somehow finds a way to get open, even if you're trying to cover him. So he's someone to definitely keep an eye on, you know, and someone to prepare for as the Gophers, you know, play them in a couple weeks here.
Luke, I mentioned it when we were talking before, but how does, number one, can you imagine being an underbetter on this game going into the fourth quarter?
You just sweat.
Oh my gosh, 19 total points. The over-under is 59.5. And then you watch 42 points go up in the over hits. I just can't imagine that beat. But I remember watching this live with Dan Owen in the press box, and he just kept laughing to himself. Number one, he had a little bit of chunk of change on the game. But I think the final drive that Syracuse ends up pulling ahead, Purdue couldn't get out of its own way. I think they had like 6 or 7 penalties. And then you look at the end of the game, how does Purdue find a way to lose a game in which they were 10 of 17 on third down to compare of 3 of 12 for Syracuse? They had 100 and I think 70 more yards of total offense. I mean, how does that happen? Because you commit 13 penalties for 138 yards and you continue to extend drives for Syracuse at home. So that's two times you've seen Jeff Brohm, maybe future Louisville coach Jeff Brohm. We've seen him get in tight games with this team and just nowhere to go. I mean, the only thing else I would mention is no King Doru in this game for Purdue. So they absolutely couldn't run the ball at all. 18 carries for the running backs for 44 yards. But Charlie Jones, man, I mean, he threw 3 games, and I understand that, again, Purdue's entire offense is passing the ball. Charlie Jones, through 3 games, has 32 receptions for 474 yards and 5 touchdowns. I would imagine that 32 receptions is going to beat any Iowa reception total for the entire season. That's going to 474 yards is nothing an Iowa receiver would touch this year. And then 5 touchdowns. I mean, Spencer Petras is going to throw a touchdown. There is no happier man in the Big Ten than Charlie Jones going from, well, Iowa's just going to use me as a punt returner. And in that offense, I'm not utilized. I mean, I am incredibly excited to see Terrell Smith, Justin Wally in this Gopher secondary, because the thing about Charlie Jones and Jeff Brohm is Jeff Brohm is scheming him open. Yes. And Jeff Brohm is an elite, you know, offensive mind in doing that. So I am going to be very interested to see how Minnesota plays Charlie Jones in 2 weeks.
And you mentioned Ryan, sorry, Luke, you mentioned those numbers in three games. Keep in mind, two of those three games, a good Syracuse team and Penn State. Yes. So those numbers were not against like three Syracuse FCS teams.
11 receptions for 188 yards and Penn State 12 receptions for 153 yards.
This is an exact example of why I'm a big proponent of the transfer portal and giving players the opportunity to find a better fit, because like fit matters. Charlie Jones is a stud. Like, he found a much better fit, and you know, the philosophy at Iowa did not jive and give him the success that, you know, he's seeing at Purdue, and he's getting to live out, you know, the best situation for him at Purdue. I'm all for it. I think it's absolutely fantastic. Okay. Western Kentucky, Indiana, 33-30. Indiana hits, I believe, a 51-yard field goal in overtime to win that game. Probably not going to talk about that one much, because the Gophers don't play Indiana this year. Additionally, Rutgers, 16-14 over a not great Temple team. I'm going to be consoling my coworker that is a big Rutgers fan, because I think, once again, Derek Rutgers doesn't look very good.
It's 3-0 Rutgers to you.
Oh, I'm telling you though, Temple's not very good, guys. Like, I think that Rutgers, it kind of.
Did you see the over under in the Iowa Rutgers game this weekend?
No, I haven't looked.
35 points.
Oh.
35 in a college football game is absolutely insane. So Vegas thinks this game's going to be something like 20-14.
Who's favored?
Iowa by 6. So again, it's like they think it's going to be 21-14. And I'm thinking to myself, we'll get to the Iowa game in a minute, and I know that Derek watched a little bit more than I did of that, but it's just, I forget what the stat Daniel House told me yesterday about the Rutgers defense, but don't sleep on them, Luke. Now, again, we can talk about how bad that offense is, but what Joe Harris-Simiak's got them doing defensively right now, I mean, I am very intrigued to see that game for them against Iowa, and I'm sure we'll get to Iowa here next.
All right, New Mexico State 7, Wisconsin 66. At one point, Minnesota and Wisconsin both were up 49-0, which I found very humorous as I looked at my telephone. Again, Jerry Kill's team, not great. They played a gauntlet of a non-conference slate, but you know what? They got paid. He's trying to build a program. They're 0-4 on the season, 0-3 on the road. In Wisconsin, you know, they did kind of what Wisconsin does. They pounded an inferior opponent. Graham Mertz was okay, 12-15 for 251 yards and 3 touchdowns. He didn't hurt them. I don't know, Ryan, what do you got for this one?
We're going to find out a lot more about Graham Mertz in the very, very near future, because you look at his completion percentage. I mean, he's got 6 touchdowns, 2 picks, 71% completion percentage through 3 games. And I'm just like, Wisconsin's 2-1. And I don't know what to exactly think about this Wisconsin team, other than I don't think they're elite defensively. But we're certainly going to find out this weekend when they have to travel to the Horseshoe against an Ohio State team that just put up 77 points against what was thought to be a good MAC defense. Now, again, I think Ohio State got back Jackson Smith and Jabba, among others. But I am very intrigued for the next 2 weeks of Wisconsin Badgers football, just like I am Minnesota and Iowa, because Wisconsin's next 2 weeks on the road in the Horseshoe, and then they have to come home to take on Illinois. I will continue to say with Illinois, who's coming off a bye week, I am more bullish on that team than I definitely was coming into the season, and I'm very interested to see what Graham Mertz looks like against Ohio State's defense and then returning home to take on Ryan Walters' defense. Like, if Illinois is healthy defensively going into that game, I think more people need to be given Illinois a shot, but we're going to find out a lot more about Wisconsin here, just like we are Minnesota and Iowa in the next 2 weeks now that conference play is back on.
All right, quick question for both of you. Do you put more value on Wisconsin scoring 66 points or the Gophers giving up no points against Jerry Kill's team?
I feel bad for New Mexico State, man. I mean, it is tough times out there for the Aggies. It's just that team is so bad. I don't know that you take away anything other than you got to scrimmage in against a terrible team and you got out of there hopefully healthy. I don't know what Wisconsin's injury situation was coming out of that game, but it's just, boy, Jerry Kill, what did you get yourself into, me boy?
Yeah, and I mean, it's, I think back to the Gophers, New Mexico State. I mean, New Mexico State really on offense gave an effort on one or two drives. I mean, they just kind of packed it in. So I didn't get a chance to watch the Wisconsin game against New Mexico State, but 66 points, I'm guessing a lot of chunk running plays. That's typically how Wisconsin has earned it. But I did see on the stat line, Graham Mertz, you know, had a very good game. So yeah. I'm not sure. I probably would give the edge to Wisconsin just because, again, when the Gophers played them, they didn't seem to have an interest in trying to do anything on offense.
All right, let's get to the game that I'm sure both of you degenerates stayed up way too late watching. 27-0, the Iowa Hawkeyes get a win. They get an offensive touchdown. What a novelty. And a passing one at that, fellas. And the Nevada Wolfpack 0. So this game had a lightning delay. It ended something
like 3 or 4 lightning delays. This game ended at like 2 a.m, didn't it?
Yep, something crazy like that. It brought me back to the lightning / rain delay where Chris Streveler threw for like 8 yards on the day. And they still found a way to beat San Diego State. So this game, again, not very close. Nevada is not a great team. On the day, Spencer Petras was 14 of 26, 175 yards. Again, not a great completion percentage. Average depth of the target, not great. Did get a touchdown finally. This offense only managed 161 yards of rushing offense against a really, really mediocre Nevada Wolfpack team. I don't know. The memes are going to still be coming about this Iowa offense, Ryan.
Derek, I want to kick it to you first. I mean, you watched more of this game than I did. Go ahead.
Here's what I would say. You know, there was, if you looked at the score and saw that, okay, Iowa's offense figured something out, they got points on the board, I would tell you there are still major problems. I would say don't be fooled by the points they put up on offense, because this is just for the curiosity for a college football fan that wants to see something different. Iowa football is must-watch television right now for several reasons. The offense continues to have, at a Power 5 Big Ten level, just a whole host of problems against very inferior opponents. It is something to watch, guys. I took a look specifically to see, you know, are these defenses just absolutely loading up the box because Iowa doesn't have a big passing threat, and so they can load up the box and try and stop the run. Or, and I guess what my conclusion would be, I don't think Iowa's doing very well running the ball either. I mean, I saw them stopped on run down and distances without a loaded box. So they have issues in both the running and the passing game. Now, I know they're really banged up in receivers, but the quarterback position obviously has been covered ad nauseum. Major issues there. Now, the other reason they're must watch is because their defense and special teams are incredibly good. It's wild to watch a football game in which they have such struggles on one side of the ball and they are so completely and utterly dominant on the other side of the ball. Now, Nevada isn't a juggernaut by any means, but it was more of what we'd looked at previously, and I'm starting to lean a little bit more towards Ryan's end of sentiment here. You know, last week I kind of came out of this saying I was going to figure out, they're going to figure something out. They're going to be there in November. Now they still, I think, will be. But there on offense, that's worse than I thought. I don't know that there's any quick fix, even if you get guys back from injury. But that being said, I do think their defense and special teams are good enough to keep him in every single game. So it's just, it's wild to watch.
It's like you look at the return game, Luke. Like, I was punt returns yesterday, or I guess technically this morning because of when this game finished, but 41 punt return yards. Like, their kicker makes both field goals. Torrey Taylor continues to be the Ray guy in 46 average on 7 punts with 4 inside the 20. Their defense continues to play incredibly well, including, no surprise, Jack Campbell and Seth Benson among them. Like, it's so wild to just see two sides of the ball play so well, and then Spencer Petras completing just over 50% of his passes for 175 yards and a 6.7 average. Like, maybe they found something in the freshman, Caleb Johnson, with 7 carries for 103 and 2. I'm going to say it again, and I said it before, I am incredibly interested to see how the first 4 games of conference play go for the Iowa Hawkeyes. They are on the road this weekend in Piscataway as 6-point road favorites. Then they face Michigan. Then they have to travel on the road to Illinois before they take on Ohio State. Like, it's not going to get any easier for that offense against Joe Harris-Simiak's Rutgers team, which is going to be the easiest of the 4 upcoming tests, because Michigan and Ohio State's defenses look really, really good. And we know my sentiments. I think if Justin Gard is listening to this, I think Ryan Walters is my new Jim Leonard. I enjoy watching Ryan Walters coach defensive football, man. So I want to see, did we learn anything about Iowa besides their defense and special teams are just going to keep them in every game? Because if they're going to come out of this next 4-game stretch at 500 or even, you know, somehow above that, Spencer Petras and Brian Ferentz, they got to figure something out, man.
All right. I just want to add some more evidence to Derek's point, you know, just reinforcing the offensive struggles aren't gone. On the day, 3 touchdowns for Iowa. On their 3 touchdowns, can you guys guess how many plays and down and how long they had to travel for all 3 of those?
Oh, boy.
All right.
Derek, you go first. Let me think.
No, let's bring it, Luke. Just sell.
All right. 2 plays, 40 yards for the first touchdown, 18-second drive. 4 plays, 41 yards, 2 minutes and 20 seconds. All right, and the very last touchdown was 1 play and 55 yards. For their touchdowns, they amassed a total of 7 plays in total. This is an offense that could not string together a long drive. They only had 1 touchdown drive that went, you know, across midfield. You know, and I watched part of the game just seeing like, man, this just seems still somewhat anemic, but I know they're up 14 early. But I'm with you, Derek. This is a defense and special team that are on a very elite level. But this offense is just woof.
I mean, is it fair to say, you mentioned the next 4 games, Ryan, is it fair to say it's hard to imagine Iowa being either a double digit favorite or double digit underdog in any of those games? Because how could you pick them to beat anybody? Well, how could you pick them to beat anybody by like 2 touchdowns?
Yeah.
Or how could you pick them to lose by 2 touchdowns? Because their defense is just too good.
Here's the thing that I just find so crazy about that too, is it's like their offense is just bad enough that they can't put up points, but their defense is just so good that they're not really going to give up many points, and ultimately they just have no identity on offense. They're just none. Well,
that's, I mean, if you just, we're so focused on the offense, everybody is, because of, you know, this almost historic level of issues. But if you just forget about the offense for a second, just completely put them out of your mind, just look at what the defense has done. No, it is almost impossible to score in this defense. So it's, you know, and again, with the exception of Iowa State, it hasn't been murderer's row, but that's why, as Ryan mentioned, it's going to be intriguing. They are going to play some better offenses for sure. And we'll just see what happens, but I could definitely see defensive scoring coming back. You know, the beginning of this game against Nevada, it was, Ryan, I thought of you, one of the first possessions, Nevada throws a pass directly to an Iowa cornerback, and the Iowa cornerback dropped it. He would have walked in for a touchdown. So there's still that possibility, Iowa being Iowa, of scoring lots of points on defense. But yeah, it's must-watch football. It's crazy. I haven't seen anything like it.
That's such a good point, though, Derek, is in the next four games, they're not going to be double-digit favorites or dogs because their offense is so horrible, but yet their defense and special teams are so elite. And it's just it's the funniest part about Iowa. It's just – go ahead, Luke.
Can you imagine being Phil Parker, though, and just thinking, like, we're wasting arguably one of my best defenses or whoever the special teams coordinator is now. I forget the name off the top of my head. But just like, you guys realize that we could be like one of the top five teams in the country. This could be our opportunity to go to the college football playoff, and here we are literally wasting it.
It's remarkable. I mean, as Derek mentioned, Iowa football is must watch every week right now. You know, I've just kind of – Derek, I've come around to – it's just Iowa football that they're going to have interceptions thrown directly to them. They're just going to play the field position game. Torrey Taylor is just going to pin you within the five. And there's going to be a game that they're going to get blown out in the next four. Now, if I'm wrong, you'll all tell me I'm an idiot and I'll own up to it. But it's like there's going to be a game in these next four where it's not going to be Iowa's offense constantly on a short field. Now, I don't know what game it's going to be or what game Iowa's not going to be plus 700 in the take give. It's just, I can't wait to watch. I mean, this is how Big Ten football is, boys.
Just
I can't wait to watch Rutgers, Iowa with an over-under of 35 because I have no idea what's going to happen when things get weird in Piscataway.
Yeah, and it's just amazing how it's taken over the college football landscape. I know we're a Gopher podcast, and you know Iowa is one of our rivals, and we haven't been able to beat them in so long. But like, this is it's crazy.
Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, it's not just us. Okay, the other thing, and we'll end on this specific question with this game is, if you're Torrey Taylor, why don't you go pro? I have been asking this question for the last week, and honestly, the guy's got to be able to get a chance in the NFL. Like, right? Like, why wouldn't you just be going pro? This, and like, why is he in college right now?
He can, Luke. He's got to play 3 years of college.
Oh, yes. I'm so sorry. I totally forgot that.
Yeah, if I'm Torrey Taylor,
you got to think you go pro, right?
My stock's never going to be higher with a more inept offense after this season. And I think he's like 20-something. It's got to be like 26, 27, 28 years old because he's Australian. Like, go get paid before that leg strength goes away in your early 30s, man.
Yeah.
So what happens if, again, I just feel like I continue to say this every year, and Iowa continues to prove me wrong. Just what happens when you don't have like a punter like Torrey Taylor?
That's a good point, Ryan, because unless the Iowa offense is backed up in the shadow of their own end zone, you expect Torrey Taylor to put the ball inside the 10-yard line on every single punt. So if your defense is set up inside your opponent's 10 on every possession, that's a pretty good table setting for a defense.
All right, final game, SMU 27, Maryland 34. Maryland moves to 3-0 on the season. A good win for Maryland, one probably that you sort of expect. But again, Mike Locksley and that team are finding a way to get victories, and it's gonna be interesting to see if they're going to be able to push in the Big Ten East.
I mean, that's a good SMU team. Like, I don't like that was a 2-0 team. Now, I understand SMU hadn't exactly played anybody, but to say that, you know, SMU is not a good football team, like SMU would be better than any team in the non-conference that Minnesota or Wisconsin played. And that's where, I mean, I'm very interested to kind of see what Maryland does this year. Now, Minnesota finally doesn't play them, which that was still one of the weirdest crossover concepts, was Minnesota and Maryland of all teams had to play each other for 4 or 5 straight years. But we're also going to learn a lot more about this Maryland team in their next three games. They're on the road in Ann Arbor this weekend before taking on Michigan State and Purdue at home. I mean, Talia continues in this offense. I mean, it just comes down to, do you think Maryland's defense, as it has been for the entire Mike Locksley era, do you think their defense can do enough? And to be fair, Maryland actually won a close game, which I feel like, again, you can correct me if I'm wrong,
But it feels like every Maryland game is either like a 21-point win or a 21-point loss. So the anti-Iowa in that regard, where you know that, you know, this is actually one where they finally won a close game, and they did it coming behind in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see if they can sustain success. That's also been their hallmark, is having early season success. They've been able to amass some talent out there. That hasn't been a huge issue. And Mike Locksley can put together good offensive game plans, but the script we've seen for Maryland is, as they drift outside of the non-conference and get into the meat of the schedule, things, the wheels just sort of come off. So huge test, obviously, at Michigan. But even beyond that, just can they sustain success and win some of these closer games that you mentioned, Ryan, that, because that's been the question mark, you know, that's been the history now in recent years.
All right. So that pretty much does it for this episode. Want to thank everybody for listening. A big shout out to the Goal Line Club. You know, sign up, support them. Again, the Burns Insurance Agency and Legacy and Life Law. Support those that support Gopher Gridiron Radio. Appreciate you listening, and go Gophers.